You're listening to DVD Talk Radio.
Mr. Corman.
Hello, call me Roger.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that, but I'll try. I'm a big fan. Primarily, if I could thank you for one thing, it would be for Piranha.
Yeah.
I love that movie so much. I guess, first off, I'd like to know, how did the King of Bees get hooked up with Mickey Mouse?
Well, we had our own home video division here through New Concord. And in the last year or two, we saw our share of the market diminish a little bit. And checking, we found that it was not unusual. Most of the independents were doing a little bit less. The majors simply were doing more. So we decided to, if you can't beat them, join them, to join a major. We talked to a number of the major studios, and Disney gave us actually the second best deal, but we liked the people at Disney very much. We're very impressed with what their plans were and with they themselves. So we chose Disney.
Now, when you speak about market share, is that just on store shelves, or how were you suffering?
Pretty much on store shelves. We weren't getting the placement in the stores. The majors were getting better placement, and we were selling fewer copies. It wasn't major, but it was falling off. It had fallen off, well, it was fairly major. It had fallen off by about 20%, and a 20% drop, and we felt it was not going to come back. It was an irreversible decline.
Well, moving to Disney, you do get a sort of an advance in technology. It's sort of surprising to think that Death Race 2000 will be on a Sony PlayStation. I think that sort of illustrates how the viewing of movies has changed. Could you talk a little bit about that, about how you used to move movies from city to city, and now it's very much different?
Exactly. It's interesting you know that, because most people don't know that. The very first picture I made in the late 1950s got a full theatrical release, and what we would do is we'd maybe make 100 prints and play 50 prints in one city, 50 prints in another city, and then move them over to another city, and eventually all over a period of 2 or 3 months, and sometimes we'd go up to a couple hundred prints if the film did well, we would play the whole country that way. And that was a very strong market for us up until maybe the late 80s, up until about 90, give or take a few years, when it began to decline, the theatrical market declined, and cable came in, and that helped us. And then as cable started to be taken over by the majors, home video came in to help us. And now as our share of home video is started to decline, we decided simply to join forces. We'll still be an independent production and distribution in other media, but home video, it's through Disney.
And moving from those city to city, you're also, I find interesting that oftentimes the marketing of the films would be different between cities. If you saw something was successful in one place or not, you could change. That's not really the case nowadays.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, this is one of the problems, although it's nobody thinks of it as a problem because it's universal. Now you open in 2,000 or 3,000 theaters and your campaign had better be right, because you don't get a second chance. I remember we opened once in Detroit and did not do as well as we expected, and we were to open the next week in Chicago. We canceled the Chicago a date and created a new advertising campaign, and the film did better. I wouldn't say it was phenomenal, but we definitely moved it up with the new advertising campaign.
Of course, you've got Big Bad Mama and Rock and Roll High School and Death Race 2000, but another one that you have coming out is Dino Croc, and this really fascinates me because of the resurgence in the creature features. Can you explain that to me? How did that come back?
I don't know exactly. I think they've always been with us. I mean, we made in the 50s and 60s very low budget, generally with somebody in a suit, monster films. And I think maybe they've come back because with the advances in computer graphics, you can make them so much better now. But the origin of DinoCroc, which is the only new picture, DinoCroc is actually a new picture, the others are all old ones. It goes back a number of years ago. Before Jurassic Park, I bought a book called Carnosaur, which was published before Jurassic Park, about the cloning of dinosaurs, and I brought it out before Jurassic Park, and it did extraordinarily well. And it did so well that I went to Carnosaur 2, 3, and 4. And if you can imagine a graph, I'm looking at a window pane here, and say along the horizontal axis, at the axis on the bottom, the x-axis, is the cost of the picture, which remains pretty much constant. Each picture costs about the same. The y, or vertical axis, is the return. Now, on the first one, the return was way above. The profit was way above the cost. The second one, the profit dropped a little bit, but was still very substantial. And as normal, the third one was a little bit less. The fourth was a nice profit, but nothing great. And I said to the staff, fellas, there will never be a Carnosaur 5. The lines are going to cross on the next picture. It's been a great run, but we walk away. Now, a year or so ago, I saw something in the paper about scientists who had found the fossil of a prehistoric crocodile, which was about twice as big as today's crocodiles. Wow. And I thought, we're back in business. And the title came to me immediately, DinoCroc. Oh. And the story came later.
So for those out there hankering for another Carnosaur picture, they can pretend like this is the fifth Carnosaur picture.
Right. DinoCroc is the bastard son of Carnosaur.
Well, that's great. I think that's it's interesting because I was going to ask you about your sequel philosophy, but I think you just spelled it out. It's when those lines cross, that's when you stop.
Yes, right.
I was speaking with, got to interview Jack Hill previously, and I asked him about the difference between you, working with you and working with Arkoff.
Oh, yeah.
And he said it was very clear. He says Arkoff was a businessman and Mr. Corman was a artist. But you are a businessman and very astutely so with this move to Buena Vista. How do you reconcile those two worlds?
I think you don't reconcile them totally. I do think there is some creativity in what I do, so there might be some section of the personality, the persona as an artist, but I think it's a combination as such. And I think to succeed, except for a very few great artists, most of the people who succeed are able to combine their artistic sensibility and their business sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly been the case in your story, that's for sure. I'm really fascinated with character actors, and one of my favorites is Clint Howard.
Yes.
How integral to your pictures over the years have been actors like Clint Howard? They keep showing up and are always, anytime they show up on the screen, you know you're going to get something.
Yes, actors like Clint Howard and Dick Miller, who's ill at the moment, been with us, so we've used them many times. There's something almost a family about it. First, the reason they show up is because they're good. And then gradually we become at least friends or business friends. There's a camaraderie. It's somebody you know you can depend upon and you know will give a good performance.
I think others would probably ask you about Coppola or Scorsese or something, but I want to ask you about Jim Wynorski and Fred Olen Ray.
Okay.
what is it about those two fellows that kept you going back to them?
Well, both of them are part artist, part businessman, as I was saying. Both have the ability to make a good film in relationship to the budget, and you can depend upon them to do just that, to make for what you're spending, a good film, and you know they will come in on budget. For instance, Jim has just finished shooting a picture, another creature film, Cry of the Winged Serpent, for us. We're doing the special effects now.
Right. Sounds good to me. What about, I guess back when you were working with Jack Kill, it was the Philippines and now it's the former Soviet Union. Do you anticipate that films will, even the major studios are filming in those Eastern Bloc countries? What do you foresee that will change, that we'll be moving back to the States or back to Canada?
I will be moving back a little bit. I've always shot in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, I'd say I'm shooting about 40% of my films in the United States and 60% overseas, but I'm hoping to reverse that and do maybe two-thirds of the films in the United States. The Screen Actors Guild, the Writers Guild, the guilds are beginning to recognize that their prices, their wage scales, were really designed for major studios, and simply were almost impossible to work with for low-budget pictures. And just recently, all three—the writers, the directors, and SAG, SAG, the Actors Guild—have all created different categories for lower-budget films, which gives you an incentive to come back to the United States.
Over the years, you've had different incarnations of your production companies and everything, but now you're, I guess, for some time now, you've been a brand name. How is that?
Well, when I started my own company, New World, in 1970, when I sold it in the 1980s, the name went along with it. Matter of fact, that was the main thing, because I retained my library. I sold the distribution arm and the company's name and the personnel, but kept my films, and I had to, and I signed an agreement, of course, not to use the name New World, so that ended that, and I came up with several names as we changed from time to time, and we sort of have two divisions now, and I'm not certain it will stay that way, New Concord and New Horizons,
mm-hmm.
and I think I'll probably drop one of them, I don't know which. And settle on one. What would you do between the two?
I think that your name itself is enough to sell me on a DVD. So I think you've become it's not New Concord, New Horizon. It's Roger Corman.
Well, maybe I might just say Roger Corman.
I find it interesting that on the box art for all of these new Buena Vista releases, that it is very much Roger Corman this and Roger Corman that. So I think that's very fitting.
Well, maybe I'll do that.
I did want to ask, this Masters of Horror, I was sorry to hear that you weren't able to participate in the first round. Do you think you'll be able to join them the second round?
I'm not certain. I got a little bit ill and wasn't able to do it. I'm not certain I'll be able to come back.
Oh.
Directing is hard work. Speaking of Masters of Horror, I would like to put in a word for Joe Dante's version, which was, I don't know if you've seen it or not.
Not yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Joe, it's coming out very soon, as a matter of fact. And it's a great horror thing. The ghosts of soldiers killed in Iraq come back to haunt the Bush administration. Joe told me the idea, and I said, Joe, that's the greatest idea I've ever heard for a horror film. He said, they'll probably send me to Guantanamo Bay.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, I really appreciate the time, sir, and thank you so much for all the great films through the years.
Very good. Thank you, Noah.
You've been listening to DVD Talk Radio. Find DVD Talk Radio online at dvdtalkradio.com.